Hi, I'm Sharad Jitin and welcome to Consider This. The recent ban on e-scooters has stirred up a long-standing concern about urban transport, one that seeks to find practical and hopefully inexpensive solutions to our already car-choked cities. My first guest is Andrew Sierra, columnist with Malaysia Kini, who's argued against the ban. Andrew, thank you so much for joining me today. I want to ask you about a factoid you put out there in your piece, which states that 21% of the Malaysian public utilizes buses and our rapid transit system, much less the government's target of 40%. And you say the problem is last mile connectivity. Can you explain how last mile connectivity is related to this ban on e-scooters?
Okay. The problem is what they call the first and last mile connection. Say from my house, I want to get to the MRT station. Okay, so then from there, I take a ride. And then after I get to my MRT station at the end of it, let's say Bukit Bintang, I want to go somewhere else. Again, you know, I need to take something else. So if I use Grab, that would mean I will have to pay for 4 Grab rides just to get to one place from my house to the final destination. And that works up to about what, 30 ringgit, you know, which is not feasible for public transport, frankly. So what e-scooters do is you ride it from your house to the MRT station, take it on with you. That's the magic part. Take it on with you on the train. And then when you reach your destination, you unfold it and then use the e-scooter to get to the final destination. So you are connecting the first and last miles seamlessly.
Right, okay, so you're saying that e-scooters and a class of vehicles, these micro-mobility vehicles or personal mobility vehicles are the solution to first and last mile connectivity. But I wonder, do you have a sense of how popular these are? These are as a solution to the what is actually a long-standing problem, Andrew?
I don't have the statistics, but you know, when I take the rides at the Taman Tun Dr. Ismail MRT station, I do see people riding their e-scooters to and fro. So they are not as widespread as in Singapore, but they are being used here. Yes.
Yeah, and there's one other thing that you point. I mean, you kind of dismiss the transport minister's concern about safety. I mean, this is, and I think there's in fact quite a bit of material on the question of injuries suffered as a consequence of people falling off their e-scooters and such. Why do you dismiss this argument?
I don't dismiss it, but I think it's a gross overreaction. You know, we don't have the kind of e-scooter accidents like in Singapore, and already our dear transport minister wants to ban it. Now, first of all, let me say, e-scooters are the wave of the future. They are an eco-friendly way to solve our, you know, to enhance the use of our public transport. They don't do much pollution. And this is the way forward, you know. So, for example, you can put the footprint that a car occupies, you can put in 10 e-scooters. So imagine taking 10 cars off the road. You know, you're freeing that much more space from our traffic clogged, traffic jam roads, right? So we should be encouraging these rather than putting obstacles in the way.
Right, I understand. And I think banning is often, you know, best characterized as a blunt policy, public policy tool. There is, interestingly, in the reports coming out on the banning, saying that the transport minister is actually open to the use of micro-mobility vehicles, but he says that local authorities must provide infrastructure and facilities to support its safe use. I mean, is that a reasonable position to take?
In the first place, of course, you know, the cycling lanes and e-scooter lanes should have been provided years ago, you know, which was not done. The budget for the MRT was about what, 20 or 25 billion, something like that. I don't think even 1% of that money was spent to provide access in the forms of cycling lanes. So in my area alone, there are several condos which are near MRT stations, but you can't really get there unless you take a Grab. So I think this is a scenario repeated in many MRT and LRT stations. So anyway, back to my point about the overreaction. It's like saying that if we have one motorbike accident, we should ban all motorbikes. So, I mean, that's not fair, obviously, right? And the point of the matter is, for example, in 2019, we had 6,000 deaths from traffic accidents in Malaysia, of which about 70% were motorbikes. So if you want to ban, before you ban e-scooters on the grounds of safety, we should ban motorbikes.
So Andrew, we look at the minister's statement, it does say that bicycles and electric bicycles and trishaws are going to continue to be allowed to use public roads. What is the distinction for you between the classes of vehicles?
Frankly, I don't see a real difference between e-scooters and bicycles. And, you know, I myself use a small foldable bicycle, occupies about the same space as an e-scooter. So I don't see why one is allowed and the other is banned. And I think e-scooters occupy a unique niche, which authorities around the world still don't quite know how to deal with. So, for example, in France and Germany, they are treated as motorized vehicles, something like small motorbikes. That's how they were treated in Japan too. But what's interesting is that in April, the Japanese parliament decided, no, we're going to treat e-scooters now as motorized bicycles. Formerly, they need licenses. Now, there's no more need for licenses. Formerly, they were banned from using footpaths. Now, they're allowed to use footpaths, but with a speed limit of 6 kilometers per hour. And they can also go on roads, but a speed limit of 20 kilometers per hour. So the point is, we need to manage this new technology and think up of whatever appropriate rules and systems to promote an eco-friendly mode of transport, rather than using a sledgehammer to whack everything just because, you know, we the Minister of Transport or something doesn't want to bother thinking of deeper, more holistic solutions.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that in terms of, government's role the perceived lack of imagination in government on solutions for public transport. They like the $1 billion solutions. These are small solutions, often solutions that communities or some private enterprise can take on. And certainly individuals can make those choices. I myself, use public transport. I don't drive, right? So I would like to see some of these solutions. Where do you think, and when someone like yourself, where are you looking when you think of cities that have embraced the kind of new wave of thinking about mobility in city settings?
All right. Say one day we have flying cars. And then, there are maybe 2 or 3 accidents involving flying cars. So what? Do we just ban all flying cars because of these accidents? Obviously not, right? We have to find a way to manage flying cars so that they can be used safely. So the same thing with e-scooters. It's a new mode of transport. It's called micro-mobility. And it needs to be managed and properly regulated. I have no objection if the ministry wants to have, say, okay, all e-scooter users must sit for an exam, must have a license, must use helmets, must have lights, bells, and all that. Fine, some countries overseas do that, some countries say no. So whatever it takes, but let's study it properly, regulate it, because this is part of the future. I mean, we always say that the future is electric. When we say that, we don't just mean, you must buy an expensive Tesla electric car. What about this small, tiny electric e-scooters? These are a great solution for mobility to get us from A to B without spending huge amounts on a Tesla.
All right, thank you very much. I've been speaking to Andrew Sierra, columnist of Malaysia Kini. Stay tuned to Consider This. We'll be back on with more on the e-scooter issue. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Sharad Kuchan. With me now is Ramachandran Muniyandi. He's CEO and co-founder of Asia Mobility. Ram, if we can begin with this ban, it seems to be coming from a place of concern about the safety of those who use the streets. But, as my previous guest suggests, that isn't sufficient reason to ban, a whole class of vehicles, especially ones that have become useful in many other urban contexts to resolve problems of mobility in cities. What was your first response or thoughts when you heard about the ban?
Yes, Sharad. I think my first response was actually, I saw it as a very backwards regressive move. That is what I felt. A ban like this, which is so all-encompassing on public roads for a large class of vehicles, I feel it's a regressive move on the part of the ministry and the government. And it doesn't help the fact that we are in need of moving people towards public transport usage. Our public transport ridership is extremely low at 20%, when in fact we should be 40%. And it's a target that we've missed every year since setting the target. And this is actually not helping. So I feel that an outright ban like this does not help anybody except create more confusion in the public. You actually are not encouraging people to, consider the use of such, devices and vehicles for their first mile, last mile, transport needs.
Right. What could possibly be animating a government? I know that the stated reason is safety, but when you look around the world and you make a kind of comparison between other cities and their policies, where do you think this comes from?
I think in some regards, Malaysia is maybe emulating what Singapore did. But in doing so, we have committed a grave mistake simply because Singapore has got a network of public transport that is reachable. And therefore, their first mile, last mile isn't as great a problem as it is in Malaysia. And therefore, banning the use of these vehicles on their roads there, actually, there is an option available. There are street walks, there are pavements, that they can use. But they have also, I hear, banned it on some pavements. But us banning on the roads here actually leaves them to go nowhere. We don't have an adequate amount of pavements anyway. So there are places where if you're not on the road, you are in the drain, So it's coming from being able to just look at Singapore, I think, because that's the closest thing. They have done something similar, but they have got a different infrastructure to consider. We can't ban it because by banning it on public roads, they can't go anywhere else. So we are following Singapore wrongly in this case, I think.
Right. Okay. So, Ram, you mentioned infrastructure because it's quite interesting. In the report, the transport minister does, in fact, open, the possibility of having these micro-mobility vehicles on our roads if, as he says, local authorities provide the necessary infrastructure and facilities. Now, so this is a federal minister putting it on local authorities to create the infrastructure. How does that square with your sense of how urban transport needs to be planned and who's responsible for it?
Absolutely. They are creating another chicken and egg scenario here by passing the buck for infrastructure to local councils who does not have transport planning expertise, most of them. The Ministry of Transport should be planning this and then working in conjunction with local councils everywhere in order to plan transport infrastructure. So that is where I feel it you know, can't be done in this way by saying, look, we will allow it when the infrastructure is there. The infrastructure builders are going to turn around and say, we are not going to spend on this. We are not going to invest on this because we are not sure who's going to use it. And we don't know how to plan for it. We don't know how to design for it effectively. Where do we build those lanes? Where is the data to guide us in those decision-making processes? Local councils are already stretched in terms of their budgets. We know that. And they are going to want to, you know, direct spending towards where the demand is at. And the demand for non-public transport users, guess what? They're going to say, look, I'm not using public transport. Don't build me a cycling lane there. No one's going to use it. Build for me a walkway to my local park. Build for me a walkway to the shopping mall. Build for me a walkway to the, you know, local commercial areas. That's what's happening. That's already happening. That has been happening for years. So we are not learning from our own mistakes. And we are repeating it now, you know, first mile, last mile manner, nothing is going to get built. And this is going to leave the entire first mile, last mile connectivity problem now in no man's land. You know, Ministry of Transport is going to say it's not my problem. The local councils say no one's helping me with this, planning with this. It leaves us, the rakyat here, trying to figure out how do we use this to connect to public transport services. And that is my point, where it's a very regressive move overall. This is not going to work. The Ministry of Transport cannot subcontract planning activities to local councils who don't have the expertise.
Right. I want to ask you about the other side of it. We talk about government a lot, and you know, maybe the lapses in planning and so on. But what about people? When you think of the Malaysian public and the way it imagines how it wants to move, right? And there are issues of comfort, there is the weather, and so on and so forth, right? And so, is the e-vehicle, the e-scooter, a real option when you consider possibilities of rain, what happens when it's a rainy day and so on? What research has been done in this area to look at how the public thinks about transport?
Yes, I don't think enough research has been done for Malaysia in particular, considering that, you know, mobility is a very hyper-localized thing. What works in Europe, what works even in Singapore, does not necessarily will work in Malaysia. I don't think enough research has been done. But I think us being Malaysians, we are well aware of the problems. So it's not something that needs to be discovered. It's something that needs to be expounded. Definitely, if you look at where will the use cases be, you look at the current footprint of these e-scooter services and these personal mobility services, where are they? They are generally in city centers. They are generally in very highly urbanized parts of the city. It's not everywhere, though. There are pockets of it. You don't find e-scooters everywhere. But that's how it should be, because it's first mile, last mile connectivity. You are not taking an e-scooter or a moped for your entire journey. That does not happen except if you are in Europe. Here, it's a first mile or a last mile connectivity option. And that is what we actually need to unpack and understand, that our you know, mobility requirements in a city like Kuala Lumpur needs to be multimodal. And that means your first mile transport service isn't necessarily the same last mile mode. Your first mile could be driving to an LRT station and then, you know, basically catching an LRT. You're transferring to that middle mile stretch is an LRT service. Your last mile could be an e-scooter, right? Because your last mile now is in city center. Your first mile is in Subang Jaya, you know. So a sprawling city like this requires multimode transport. And that is why, these e-scooters are meant to be in pockets of the cities where there is high footfall traffic, and you are moving that footfall traffic to the use of this class of, you know, vehicles, right? That is why you would actually need to take a multimodal approach. It's not about e-scooters versus cars versus motorbikes. No, it's e-scooters with cars, with walking, with, you know, public transport. There is a use case. Our weather does not prohibit us from long journeys walking. And that is why there is a demand for e-scooters. There is a demand for such types of, you know, vehicles whereby, a 2 kilometer walk under the hot sun is unbearable. But 2 kilometer ride on an e-scooter is possible, is viable, right? So stuff like that is where transport planning comes in. So we need to plan around our city. And being able to, you know, designate zones in our cities for certain modes of transport, rather than let us all drive, or you know what, you know, the government has done all this while is this pit you know, private transport ownership against public transport, right? That strategy has not worked. We should not do that. It should complement. We should find ways to make it a multimodal journey where I'm lessening your driving, not driving all the way. I'm helping you convert from a single mode transport to multimode transport.
Ram, so we have federal government, you know, in this conversation, we have local authorities who have been asked to kind of step up. Are there any other, you know, stakeholders who can drive this conversation so that regardless of what federal government does or does not do, we can find practical and inexpensive solutions for Malaysians in cities?
I think a lot of it, if you look at it, it requires, you know, public-private engagement. You've got the agencies, the regulators, Land Transport Agency, APAT, should be involved. You've got the public transport agencies, Prasarana and the likes, you know, KTMB. Then you've got all the other private transport operators who operate public transport services. We actually don't realize that bus services in many parts of the nation is run by private operators running public bus services. So it's not just a single agency. We are a multiple agency, multiple stakeholder environment. We need to bring the private transport operators to the table as well, the shared transport service providers like e-bikes, ride hailing and such to the table in order to craft a strategy that that is multimodal, right? So I keep using that word multimodal. It's multimodal, multi-agency, multi-stakeholder. It's a combination of different kinds of transportation that will make the city work, rather than saying, look, let's just have one person, you know, come up with a roadmap. That has been the strategy all along, and it's not, it has never worked. So this is an area where a public-private partnership model framework needs to be put in place.
Thank you so much, Ram. I've been speaking to Ramachandran Muniandi, CEO and co-founder of Asia Mobility. That's all we have for Consider This tonight. I'm Sharad Kutin, and this is Astro One.